Beyond Athletic, episode 36.
The race is long, and in the end, it's only with yourself.
You might be smarter, your daddy might own a company, but you will not outwork me.
This one right here is for the people.
I'm your host, Ryan J. Owens, current pro athlete, entrepreneur, and former USA national team volleyball player. I will not be defined by my athleticism alone, but I've learned how to leverage it to stay passionate about it and prepare for life. That's why the Beyond Athletic podcast was born. I'll bring you case studies of current and former elite athletes making it happen in life, as well as tips and lessons from top sources in sports, nutrition, fitness, entrepreneurship, and more. I'm here to tell you that you are Beyond Athletic. Hey there, guys. So today's episode is another athlete case study, and I am very honored to bring to you one of my so-called mentors, even though he didn't know it most of the time, but a lot of the things that he did in the sport of volleyball, I shadowed and mimicked to try and get better and create my own game. And then off the court, watching him just as a person, I was really inspired and also encouraged to be more myself and speak up. And that's certainly something that this next guest has no issue with, and that is Kevin Barnett, a two-time Olympian. So in this show, we talk about the willingness to show up just over and over, and no matter what's going on, no matter what happens, you know, that you just keep going at it. And he brings up a great quote I'm going to have to link up in the show notes. I'm definitely going to have it linked up in the show notes, but it's something along the lines of give the best you have in that moment. And I know I always like to say, and there's another quote out there that mentions, like, you might not always be able to give 100%, but whatever you can give that day, give 100% of that. You might be sick, you might be injured, but when you show up, you show up. So whatever limitations you have, don't let them be mental limitations. So great things, you gotta always be honest with yourself. He talks a lot about that. We talk about his road to where he is now as an announcer, broadcaster, a play-by-play announcer. I really think you're gonna love this show. If you do, let me know while you're listening. Shoot out a tweet. Hopefully you're listening to this on the go. You've got it on your, you know, your iTunes, your Stitcher, or your SoundCloud even, or your TuneIn apps, and you're walking somewhere, cooking, doing something. But take a quick second just to get to Twitter or to @BeyondAthletic on Facebook and just say, hey, listening, really like it, point out anything you might have liked, and share with a friend. So without any further ado, I bring you two-time Olympian, Kevin Barnett. Hey there, everybody. Ryan J. Owens here. Today's another athlete case study where athletes learn to be great in sport and life and go beyond just being your typical athlete. Today's featured guest is Kevin Barnett. He's a two-time Olympian in Sydney and Greece, in Athens, a TV, radio, event, and podcast broadcaster, and a husband and a father. So, Kevin, are you ready to go beyond just being an athlete?
Oh, yeah. I've been forced to do that for a few years now.
Yeah. Kevin's a two-time Olympian, like I said, and he turned professional broadcaster a while back, and he specializes in ball and motor sports. He's covered a variety of broadcast roles since 2006, and over the past 3 years, his primary focus has been play-by-play and as a studio host, and he's doing that for volleyball, basketball, football, racing. So there's some motocross that you're doing, because I know that's a hobby of yours, and you might have heard him for some of the bigger volleyball things, also football. And just to give people some more, if they want to hear you, and they're probably going to anyway, it's NBC, Pac-12 Network, Fox Sports West, who just retweeted about the show. Thanks. ESPNU and a bunch of other places. You got the Grant Berger Excellence Award in media. But I want to tell people a little bit more about volleyball, because that's why we brought you on. But you played at JUCO at a junior college at Pierce College, and that was our rival for Orange Coast College back in the day. But I played against your brother, your younger brother. And then you went to Pepperdine, and there's a funny story there because literally, I know you just saw the tweet that I posted. And honestly, coming out of ETHS in Evanston in Chicagoland, you were one of my biggest role models along with Reed Pretty. So I think it's funny that you both host the Cool Volleyball podcast together. But when I made my decision to go to Pepperdine to try to play under Marv Dunphy, that was one of the huge reasons, man, was because
really?
Of you. So, oh, yeah.
Okay.
And also because he's just ridiculous as a coach. And I think people are going to hear about that from you, too. But you also were USA National Team Athlete of the Year and two-time MVP for USA National Team. So that's a bunch, actually, about you. But why don't you take a moment just to highlight where you're from, how you grew up, and how things were for you as a kid, and then bring us present moment, what you're doing and what you're most excited about.
Okay. I guess I'd go a half an hour on that. So I grew up outside Illinois, outside Chicago in Illinois, a place called Naperville, and before that, Lockport. And volleyball wasn't a big deal there. They actually didn't even have teams. They didn't have it as a high school sport until my junior year of high school, which is 1991. I didn't play that year. I ended up playing the following year because a friend of mine played. So I began then my senior year of high school. Basically in March of 1992 is when I started to play volleyball in any sort of fashion other than playing for gym class, which doesn't really count. So we did that, and then I decided when I was done with that I had wanted to move to California. I'd been out here the summer before with my uncle, and I said, all right, I'm going to move to California and be a professional volleyball player, whatever that meant. At the time, that meant beach. I wasn't really familiar with the indoor side of things. I had watched the Olympics in 92, but I wasn't terribly familiar with the professional opportunities that were available indoors, so beach was kind of the focus. And I took a year off high school and played during the day and worked during the night at a restaurant, actually right here in Redondo Beach, not too far from where I live nowadays, called the Cheesecake Factory. You may have them near your house now. It's a huge franchise nowadays. And I would play volleyball during the day and work in a restaurant at night and play tournaments on the weekends. And I was just trying to learn how to play the game. And I ended up at Pierce Junior College in a random sort of way, a random sort of meeting, and ended up at Pierce Junior College for 2 years where I did not start my first year. I was a jump serving sub. And then I started my second year, got recruited to Pepperdine, played 2 years there, and then on to the national team. So mine is kind of a funky story getting to the national team because I didn't start playing the game till spring of 92. And by spring of 97, I was on the national team by that summer, about June. So just over 5 years from never having played the game to the national team. Kind of a weird deal. And then I spent 9 years there, and my knees kind of gave up on me, and I retired. I was figuring I would do real estate in the area because the team was based in Colorado Springs. But a few months later, my wife's from Southern California. My family had moved here. And so I looked around and mentioned it to her. And we decided to move back to Southern California and did that in 06. And I started doing a variety of different things. My boys were 2 and 4 at the time. They're now 10 and 12, about to be 13 and 11. And I looked around at a bunch of opportunities, and broadcasting just kind of came to me in a variety of ways. USA Volleyball was looking for somebody new, and then NBC was looking for somebody new. And so I began as an analyst, and now I've made the transition to professional broadcaster in the role for host and play-by-play, because that's your professional broadcaster is the host and play-by-play guy. The other position, the analyst or color position, is your ex-player, ex-rider, ex-whomever. That knows the game inside and out. So I've made a transition from being the ex-athlete to being a professional broadcaster, which has been very good for me because now I can answer the question of what do you do in the present, which for a while was kind of a weird deal. And I actually have an article coming out in Volleyball Magazine this next month, a short Ask the Pro column, talking about that because people would ask you, what do you do? And for a long time, the answer was, I used to play volleyball, which is rather telling. Now the answer is I'm a sports broadcaster, and that's what I do full time.
And is that what you're most excited about now, along with your kids, obviously?
Yeah, no, it's really a unique job. I've managed to make two careers out of things that people don't make careers out of, right? You're going to be a professional athlete. Yeah, right. I'm going to be a sports broadcaster. Yeah, right. So it's those two things that I've somehow managed to make work through a bunch of work, basically. I've done it in short amounts of time, but I put in a ton of hours, and the Net Live, my podcast for volleyball, has been a big part of making that transition from athlete and analyst to professional broadcaster.
I can only imagine, Kev, because I know I still listen to my podcast episodes, and I think this is recording like episode 38 or something right now, and only 29 are out. But I got to tell you, when I listened to the first 10, I was really cringing. And now it's like, yeah, it's a little better. It's like step by step. So I
totally
you.
Get it.
Yeah. So yeah. Let's set the mood. Could you share a meaningful quote or belief?
A meaningful quote or belief? Well, I think I put my pre-stuff for this show, something from Shawshank Redemption, which is one of my favorite films. And it's Red in Shawshank, who's played by Morgan Freeman. And it's get busy living or get busy dying. That's about as profound as I get for you there, Ryan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think it's pretty clear. Normally I ask people, what does it mean to you? But that is extremely crystal clear. So why don't you tell us, share with us, because like you mentioned, and I love this article, and I'm going to look for it coming out in Volleyball Mag, but this show, Kev, is just to help athletes do exactly that, be able to make that transition from athlete to professional, whatever they want to be, whether it's, you know, entrepreneur or in whatever, much more smooth. Along that road, though, we need a lot of mentors. And so what I'm trying to do is put mentors in athletes' pockets right now for the future. So who were some of your biggest mentors in life and sport, and why were they important to you?
You know, I'd have to go with my junior college coach, Ken Stanley at L.A. Pierce. Not a pure volleyball guy. He was a basketball guy, big tennis coach, and a bunch of other things that he had done with his life. And he coached volleyball at Pierce and became a very successful coach there. And he was, I just saw him recently. It was really fun. They put me in the Pierce Hall of Fame, which was kind of a unique honor with guys like Eric Kramer and others who played quarterback for them and played quarterback for the Bears for a while, and along with a couple other championship teams. And it was really kind of a neat night. And I hadn't seen Coach Stanley in a long time. And I've often said about him that one of his best features was that he was a good coach, but he's a great man. And he had a better moral compass as to how to help some young kids who, if you end up in junior college, you've ended up there for a variety of reasons, and most of them are not good. And it's kind of like a scrap heap for a lot of folks, the junior college deal. And so I just felt like he was a real positive influence on me, and did a nice job dealing with a young, super crazy Kevin Barnett. And I commend him for that. And I think that continued when I played for Marv Dunphy at Pepperdine. I wasn't necessarily the easiest guy to deal with, but those guys figured out a way to get the best out of me and help me to mature and help me to kind of continue along the path of life. And I really appreciate the contribution they've made to me as a person, not just me as a volleyball athlete.
I love those. I mean, that's incredible. A lot of people, sorry to interrupt, but think about it this way. These people that are in your lives, they're going to impact you more than just sport, the great ones. And you've got to look for them. And if you haven't found that, like Kevin, you did, or like I have so far, and we're still looking for mentors in all areas of life, right? But these people have to be able to impact you in other ways off the court. And I think that's a huge takeaway from that with both coaches, especially the first.
Yeah, but they have to be able to tolerate you too.
And
I mean that from my own experience. I wasn't the most socially graceful dude when it came to team dynamics and dealing with coaching. And I always wanted to listen to the coach. That was never a problem. But it was kind of my intensity on the court and the way I played the game. I always approached volleyball like football with that same level of intensity. I would like to come across the net and rip your throat out every single day, even in practice. And while that's nice to bring the intensity to the practice gym, it doesn't always work if you're shouting expletives at your teammates when they're across the net. So there's something to be tempered in there. And I appreciate those guys dealing with some of that, some of those rough edges that I had, honestly, even into the national team for several years. It took me a while to kind of realize the impact that I was having on my teammates on a daily basis because I was so late to the game and I was so inwardly focused that I never was really cognizant or aware of how I was affecting my teammates with some of my choices, both on the court and off, as far as my behavior around the game and on trips and stuff like that. And I matured into that. And I thought by 2004, it's just a totally different me. And those guys that played with me only through 2000 don't really know what it was like to play with me later or how I deal with people today. And I encounter that sometimes with guys that I haven't talked to in years and years and haven't seen, but that's their only frame of reference. And it's like anything. You hope that you grow as an individual and you hope that you grow to a point where you look back at years past and go, what was I doing?
Yeah.
Why was I making those choices? I think it's a sign of growth. I hope.
For sure. I mean, that leads us perfectly into this next little section, which is, I mean, because the roads to accomplishing our dreams, they're really not that easy. And there's going to be so many struggles and kind of hurdles along the ways, setbacks, things like that. And what I want you to do now for listeners is just share because there are many for us in life, but one of your bigger struggles or failures, and just take us back to that moment. And let's hear kind of like a story to put us in that and tell us what you learned from that.
Well, I had a pretty interesting national team career in that I joined the team in 97. And that was in June of 97. And by the middle of the summer, I was starting. And not only was I starting, but I was getting a lot of sets, a lot of opportunity. And I carried that forward into 98. And in 1998, I was the best offensive player on the team through world championships and had 40 kills against Russia. This is back in old school scoring still. It's the last year of that, I think. And I just had a tremendous season, and I went overseas and I had a good season overseas, and then I come home and it was expected that things would just kind of continue, but the game was kind of changing around under me, and I had some stuff going on personally, and things in the summer of 99 started to kind of fall apart, and I ended up on the bench in the middle of the summer of 99, and I became a bench player from 99 on through the 2000 games. And that was a tremendous struggle to deal with, not getting playing time or opportunities or the notoriety to then get better and better professional contracts. And I just wasn't progressing at the same rate that I had been previously. I was kind of stuck because the game changed. The game went to rally score and you had to be better from the very beginning. You couldn't work your way into a match. And I was always a player that was better 2.5 hours in. In a lot of cases now, 2.5 hours, the match is over. So that was a real transition for me to have to learn how to hit a faster set and adjust my game to deal with what was going on around me and the personnel in the gym. And it took me, got all the way through 2001 to be able to do that effectively. And then I got hurt and I went through a year and a half of a couple of surgeries and a bunch of rehab and then came back from that. So I had this very up and down career because in 2004, I'm again, I'm named athlete of the year that year. And I basically put myself back up to where I was in 98. And then it was over. I ended up having a couple more knee surgeries and I was out. So just dealing with the ups and downs was tremendously difficult. I think it may have been harder on my wife than me, even. And it was pretty rough on me just to have to deal with me on a daily basis.
What would you say was key for you in the hardest part of that struggle and making your way back into, let's say, the starting six and being that key player? What would you say was the key thing that helped you turn that around? Was it something internal or an external motivator?
I'm just dumb enough not to quit. I mean, it's the same thing that's gone on with my broadcasting here. I'm just dumb enough not to quit. And I've said on my show, The Net Live, that we have 250 some odd episodes, and there's no genius to doing what we do. It's just a willingness to show up every week, no matter what happens. And that's what you have to have. And through all my struggles with interaction and teammates and learning to be a good teammate and learning to deal with the structure of a team and travel and the pressures there, the one thing that I think kept me all the time with coaches, that kept me in the good graces of the coaches who decide whether you're there or not and whether you will remain on the team or not, was that they knew I would show up every single day in practice and I would give you everything I had that day. Mm. It didn't matter what had happened before. It didn't matter what had happened after. It didn't matter how practice went. If practice started poorly for me, it's not like I quit. They knew that every day I showed up, I would give you everything I had on every single play. And it may not be good enough, and that's okay. I saw a thing, I posted it on social media in the last week or so from Ira Glass talking about when you first start doing something, you know it's not up to your standard. It's not up to your vision. It's not up to what you think it should be. It's not up to that level. But you just have to keep going. It's the best that you have at that moment. And you just have to keep giving the best that you have at that moment. And eventually, over time, you will acquire the skills. And Ira says it much more succinctly. It's a much nicer done piece for social media. But it's totally what matters in any one of these careers. I was able to make a career out of volleyball and make a career out of broadcasting. I mean, obviously, there are some innate characteristics there. 6'6" and jumping 40 inches is not anything that I made. It's the genetic lottery that I won. But that's whatever your skill set is, that's true for people. And then it's on you to develop it. And I will relentlessly show up and do my best. And and really, that's the no genius key to it is just keep showing up.
Yeah.
And the Net Live is that way. You were mentioning that when you first listened to your own broadcast, it's a little cringe inducing. And I thought, how hard can it be to be a host? I do the analyst work. It can't be that bad to be a host. And then I started listening to our first few shows and going, oh, this is just not good. This is terrible. So I think you have to do that. You know, you have to be like Matthew McConaughey. You got to go backwards, you know, to see where you come from or whatever. You got to go back and listen to your own stuff and check it out and be honest with yourself about it and then work on improving it and just keep showing up till it gets better.
Yeah. I love that. I want to pull out three takeaways because there was so much in there. But what you just said last, that's super key. Be honest, the willingness to show up. And then the quote that you said you butchered, I'm definitely going to look it up. But basically to give your best in the moment, you know, and that is enough. And I think some players and some athletes around the world, you know, we struggle with that sometimes. Is what I'm doing enough? And if you just show up day in and day out, like you said, I mean, so much happens. So thanks so much for sharing that. Listen, I want to hear really quick, what was like a defining moment in your life so far where you had kind of like that Einstein, that light bulb moment, that aha moment? And what steps?
Well, I'll give you one.
Yeah.
I'll give you one from recently. Last year, well, let me take you back a little further. When I first started in TV, it was always amazing to me to watch the play-by-play or the host work with the producer in the middle of a broadcast to figure out how to get from one element to the next. So say you're coming back from commercial and you need to do a sponsor element, then you need to show a certain player, then you need to get back to play, and you may need to get to some other feature or something. You have to hit a bunch of marks. And it was always amazing to me to watch Paul Sunderland or Chris Marlowe or some of those really good pros that I worked with and still work with these days, but to work with them and watch how they would get there. And I'm thinking to myself, how do they even know how to do that? I have no clue how they would construct that or know how to do that. And so flash forward to last year, and that was in 2006 or 2007. So now we're in 2014 and I've been at it 3 years as a host, play-by-play, and all the other years as an analyst. And I was standing at the desk for Monster Energy Supercross, which is motorcycle racing. And I was on that tour for 3 years with them. And I'm standing there on this 3.5-hour live show that I host. And the producer is worried about having to get back from break and get to a commercial piece and then having to come back and get to a sponsor piece and then having to come back on air and talk about a certain rider. And I have 8 pieces of paper in front of me. And at that moment, I thought, you know, because I told him, I said, well, we'll just come back. I'll talk you to here, go in a wide shot of the track. I'll say this, then we'll get to that element. We come back in, it'll be Jim and I on camera. And then, so I gave him the whole layout. She said, okay, that sounds good. And I thought, okay, I just did exactly what I was always amazed at. Plus, I have 8 sheets of paper here in front of me for this show. And I know what's on every single one and how it fits and where it goes in the program. And that was really kind of the moment where I thought, you know, I do this for a living.
Yeah.
And I've had producers say to me over the last few years, they will be wondering how to phrase or to get to something, and they'll just finish this, go, well, you're a professional, you'll figure it out. And you go, yeah, actually, that's true. That is true now. I will figure it out, and we will get there, and I do know exactly what to do. And the producer just showing faith in that, eh, whatever, you got it.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about it, because the producer is the one on the hook for the show at the end of the day. And if your producer is confident enough in the host to just say that, then you know it's something that's all going in the right direction.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I love that. And I think a lot of that came because you just stuck at it, like you were talking about before, and you paid attention to other people and you learned as you went. And then sometimes I love how the aha moments, they come to us in just the most random time, it seems. But it's really just when we were ready, we're finally ready to see it that way. So could you pick for us really quick one of the proudest moments so far in your life that stands out?
Well, I think the 2004 games, it was very vindicating for me. We finished fourth, and some people think, oh, you didn't even get the medal. Or, well, the first two thoughts are, well, you didn't get a gold medal. The next thought is, well, you didn't even get a medal. Which is true. All I have is a completion certificate that's signed that says I was there. That's really all I got. But 2000, the year 2000, and that team and those Olympic games, we were the third ranked team in the world, and we went 0-5. And it was just a miserable experience that took me a long time to even take responsibility for, because I wasn't starting and I didn't play very much. And to take responsibility for the role that I played and the lack of production in that team. And get to 2004, and I not only start, but I play well throughout the Olympic Games. The team plays well. We're fifth in the world, but we go all the way to the round of four. We lose to eventual champion Brazil in the semifinal, and then we lose to Russia in the bronze medal match. But I left. I remember sitting in the locker room, and I was disappointed we hadn't gotten, because we had a shot, obviously, at getting to the gold medal match, which guarantees you a medal in the semis. And then we had a shot at the bronze medal against Russia. And I remember sitting in the locker room, disappointed that we hadn't won, but very satisfied and very happy with the whole experience. I was very satisfied with the play of the team and the way we had performed and fought and done our best. And I was very satisfied with the way I had performed and kind of come back from injury and climbed all the way back to being a starting and meaningful member of the team. And I thought all that was really good. And another one of those aha moments was after I got home. They always have an Olympic credential. It's this big plastic credential, and you have pins on it and stuff and all kinds of other things. So it's a very nice memento of having been to the Olympic Games. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at it, and I thought, you know, I think that same picture, I think they used the same picture from 4 years ago for my photo for the Olympic ID. I don't think they even took a new one. So I wondered, where's the other one? I went to find it, and I found my Sydney ID, and I was standing in my home in Colorado Springs in the basement, and I had them side by side. Oh, it is the same picture. Absolutely, it's the same picture. I knew it. And I was looking at the two of them, and it just kind of hit me there. I said, well, the performance in Athens, the way that we played and what we did, absolutely vanquished all the bad feelings and the beast that was our terrible performance in Sydney. And I kind of was able to let go of that. And I left very happy. And I left my career not happy with the number of years I had played. I would have played more and more because I was really enjoying it more than I ever had. I would have continued to play, but I left satisfied with what I had done. And a big part of that was what happened in 2004. And I thought that performance by our team and the way we fought and the way we played and how we traveled together and who we were as a group made a big difference for me. And I was a big part of that, and I was very proud of that. And medals are, if we're 2% better, we probably have a medal.
Yeah.
I guarantee we have a medal. And medals are part luck and they're part timing, and there's so much more into it than you can control. And you know, people give you all the credit when you win it and all the blame if you don't. And I don't think either one are exactly accurate.
Yeah. Man, I'm so happy that you shared that, and you brought me back. You put me back in two moments. I watched as much as I could my first Olympics with you guys in Sydney, and it was just incredible. But then fast forward to Athens, man, I remember watching the match against Greece and just being the entire time like, I know we're going to do this. Like, I know we can do it. It was my first time. I just felt so much pride. I felt, Kevin, like I was already on the team. Like, I saw myself on the team. And I mean, it was incredible to come to the team a year later. But when you guys beat Greece, that was one of the most incredible things I'd ever seen. It was so inspiring. So I could only, you know, it just makes sense why it was so satisfying. And I hope young listeners out there and older, you know, you listen to this and you just know that don't put everything into the whole like medal thing. I know my biggest goal is still to get to the Olympics. I would love to get a medal, but I'm gonna tell you what, just getting there and competing at the highest level to me seems like such an achievement that I feel like I could be like you, you know, if I get everything and you have your teammates and being a part of Team USA, and this is a quick side, and I remember the first year that I was with you, and I'm glad that it was your year, you calmed down a little bit, but you were still pretty like, I mean, you were a force to be reckoned with. If something wasn't going right, you spoke up. And I love that about that team. And I learned so much that first summer, man. I mean, I spent a lot of time in my room on the verge of tears, sometimes maybe in tears. But I learned so much about how to step up every day. And so there's just too many lessons there. I want to move on really quick. You've talked about so much, and definitely we've gone through your failure, we've gone through your aha moment, your light bulb, we've gone through your proudest moment. And why I do this is because I want athletes to see this and know there's some stats out there, and Kevin, you'll probably know this, but most pro careers, they only last 3 to 5 years, and then within 2 to 5 years of retiring, up to 78% of, and for this is a stat for football, baseball, and basketball players in America, they're going to end up broke, divorced, or unemployed, and 36% of them break the law. This to me is just scary because you and I both know that sports and being an athlete, it totally equips you for life. I mean, you can make it through so many adversities, and so people need to learn how to leverage that, right? So I want to just get a quick idea of how you managed to make it, how you weren't part of that group. So, I mean, what was your plan to be successful in life other than just sports?
I didn't, you know, that's the funny thing about sports is that people want athletes to plan for a career after sport. You go, well, I didn't get here to the pinnacle of this by planning to be something else.
Yeah.
I got here by putting everything in. Oh, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. Well, you better or you're not going to make it. And you're not going to become, you're not going to get a national team gym. You're not going to get in a professional league. You're not going to get yourself on a roster of an NBA, NHL, NFL team. It's just not going to happen unless you're all in. Mm-hmm. And people like to pin it on athletes and say athletes are going to be broke or athletes are ill-equipped to deal with life afterwards. And I would flip it around. And I've said this on my show before that it's not an athlete problem, it's a human problem. Because if you're an accountant and you went through school, you got your accounting degree, maybe you got your CPA, you join one of the big five, or maybe it's big four nowadays, Deloitte and Touche or something coming out of college, you get this great job, you climb the ladder at Deloitte and Touche into your late 20s, early 30s, you're poised to make senior vice president or whatever is a great position there, and you're gonna earn tons of money. Somebody walks in your office one day, says to you, thanks very much for your service. We appreciate it. You no longer have this job. And by the way, you are no longer allowed to have a job in accounting. You cannot have a job associated with accounting. You have to go find a new career, which is essentially what happens to professional athletes. The person walking in the office is old age or injury, or maybe it is a coat putting a pink slip in your locker because you're just not good enough anymore for whatever reason. And they walk in there and they tell you, thanks very much for your service. Good luck. And that's what happens with the Olympic Committee. That's what happens with the NFL. And you are then set adrift into having to find something else. And it's not just athletes that struggle with this. It's that athletes are the people that face that. Nobody else faces that. There isn't something that's going to make it so you cannot be an accountant at 28 or cannot, you can no longer be, and whatever, you can no longer be an entrepreneur at 32. You can no longer own your own business at 34. There's nothing that does that. There is no situation like that except athletics, where you know that there's at some point you're not going to be able to do it. And honestly, I'm one of the lucky ones that I played as many years as I did. I still would like to play more. I've watched people play more and been a little jealous that they got to play more, even though I was happy with what I did. And I just really enjoyed it. I really had a good time. Yeah. And so it pinned on athletes, but it's everybody. Everybody would struggle with that. So that time period, it was not easy for me. Not at all. And I floundered, and I did some product design for a while and poured a bunch of money into a product that didn't have success, although I learned a tremendous amount about myself and about the process and skills that I could carry forward to another business if I was going to go that direction. And announcing came along, and I poured time into announcing, and that kind of moved forward at a little bit better rate. Even then, I got frustrated, and I nearly quit right before 2012. The winter of 2012, I was interviewing for jobs, for medical sales, for joint sales, for that kind of business, because I was getting out. I was sick of banging my head against the wall. I needed a job. We needed some income here with the kids and the house and everything else. And so I was interviewing, and it finally became apparent to me that no one was going to hire me and then let me take 3 weeks off to go to the Olympics in 2012 and work for NBC, which I was not going to give up. I was not going to give up going to London and again being a part of an Olympic broadcast team. And so I said, well, if I can make this a career by the time it's over, fantastic. By the time the Olympics is over, then great. If not, I'll get a real job. I'll go find something else to do and set myself on a new path. And as it turns out, a couple weeks later, I ended up securing 17 dates in the fall. And then at the Olympic Games, I secured another 18 dates. And all of a sudden, I was a professional. And that's repeated itself year over year. And I'll be in my fourth year of one of the offers I got at the Olympics coming up this fall that I already have signed. And so I kind of got over the hump, but I darn near quit, and or just changed directions. You know, I'd had enough, because that was 6 years of, you know, 5 or 6 years of really trying to get better at it, trying to get jobs, trying to make a career of it. And it was a nice hobby, and it was all well and good, but it wasn't what I wanted it to be. Funny thing is, sitting here today, if you told me 3 years ago I would be where I'm at today with my schedule and with the amount of stuff I do and what I do on TV and that kind of thing, I'd say, great, sign me up. Sitting here today, I'm just asking myself yesterday, how do I get to the next level? How do I push it even further? And that's what propelled me in volleyball. That's what propels people in life. It's not a sense of discontent, but a lack of complacency. I want to achieve more. I want to be better. I want to improve. I want to listen to my podcast and have it sound like a real show, which it does nowadays. You know, I don't want it to sound like a train wreck, which is what it sounded like initially. I want to keep driving forward. And as long as you don't lose that as an athlete, as long as you don't lose the willingness to drive and look and improve and find yourself, you're going to be fine. My mother worried for a long time because she watched my father, who was a tremendous basketball player, was drafted into the NBA in 1968. She watched my father flounder for the rest of his life with finding something else that he was passionate about. He couldn't find anything else. He didn't find anything else. And that hurt him. That shortened his life, no doubt. And she was worried that the same thing was going to happen to me. And I told her, I said, don't worry about me. I may have gone into a few things and come back out and decided and quit and changed directions, but the fact that I'm still looking means I'll be okay. I haven't quit looking. So you can't be discouraged by failures. You can't let failing at something then discourage you from trying something else.
Yeah.
And trying to be something else.
Could we agree on this? Because I love that you're talking into this and speaking into this, because this is a huge thing for me. And I've been thinking a lot this past few days, especially about this whole, you know, goal setting and planning and blah, blah, blah. But how I see it is this. We learn all these lessons through sports, right? And we have the ability to translate those lessons into whatever we're doing in life, right? Whether we're educating ourselves in school, outside of school, our personal relationships, ourselves, due to, like, for instance, let's say the psychological training we do for our sport, you know, the breathing, the meditation, all of that, imagery, blah, blah, blah. Let's say, in my eyes, I think that all athletes should be looking in terms of their future as, hey, this is my vision. This is where I want to be. Like, I feel like my life would, if it was like this, I would be happy. And not so much like, okay, I have to do this by this age. I have to do this. I'm going to be in this career after volleyball or my sport, but more just like a vision. And like you said, fail, learn from your mistakes, improve yourself as you go along. And I think that's the better recipe for athletes so that they don't end up, you know, falling out of their sport and not having anything to do and move forward. But knowing that it's possible that you're going to stumble after you get out.
Oh, it's not possible. It's going to happen. The rare case that it doesn't is I think the narrative that gets put out there too often that should be the case. And everyone's going to have different opportunities. Everyone's going to have differing options when they retire based on who they know, based on what their experience is, based on what context they've been able to make, how much money they've made when they've played. Now, I work with guys now that have played 10, 15 years in the NBA, and they don't need the money. They're just looking for something else to do and some other way to apply themselves, because you come to find out that 30 is not that old. I mean, you get used to being the old guy, 31, 32, 33, and beyond. You get used to being the old guy in the gym just because you're hanging around with a bunch of young people. Mm-hmm. I mean, 30 years old is not at all old when in the real world. And so you kind of have to realize that, and then you have to be willing to dedicate yourself to doing something at a much lower level than you are used to and being okay with it. And it's a struggle to be really elite at something and then have to really struggle at something. That's a tough thing to handle mentally.
Yeah.
But I think that athletes can bring a lot to the table. It's just, it's not going to be a lot of knowledge at first, but the ability to acquire it, the willingness to acquire it, the coachability, the ability to listen and then implement, all those things are important. But you're going to have to figure out a way to bring value to wherever. Because when I was interviewing for jobs, when I was first coming out of volleyball, people would ask me, you know, what were my skills or what were my strengths and this and that. And really what it came down to was, hey, do you need anybody to spike some balls around here? Because I can spike some balls. But it turns out they make aircraft parts, so they really don't need someone to hit any balls. You know? So you have to figure out where the intersection is between your potential and their need. And I don't know, it's not an easy equation to solve. It's different for everybody. There's no exact path. You just have to be willing to be diligent and stick with it.
Awesome. Well, listen, now I want to move into the last little part of this, and we're going to move into your, let's say, Kevin's quick tip jar. And we're going to try and move through each of these, let's say, in about 30 or 60 seconds, right? But what's the best advice you've ever received?
I got a good phrase for you from my junior college coach. You got to be early to be on time. Right. I hate nothing more than struggling to get somewhere on time, because if I'm a minute late, I feel it. I feel like crap. I feel like I let the person down. Like today to this podcast, when I was trying to get on the damn internet and I'm 5, 6, 7 minutes late and I can't get the thing to work, that ticks me off. So when I go to a broadcast, if I'm supposed to be there 2.5 hours early, I'm there 2.5 hours early, probably 2 hours, 35 minutes. You got to be early to be on time. So I hate struggling to be places. I like to just relax and know that I am there and I am ready for whatever it is that I have chosen to go to.
I love that. And what personal habit do you believe contributed most to your success and to getting where you are today?
Oh, just blind, blind stupidity, I guess. You know, I graduated high school and 17 days later, I moved to California. My uncle told me, you have to be out in 2 weeks. You have to find a place to live. Now, he did that out of love, not because my uncle doesn't like me. He's basically my father. And it took me a month, and then he told me, well, you got 2 days, and you can go to the shelter. And he pushed me out of the nest, you know. So I've done some stuff that if I really knew what was going to be involved in graduating high school, moving to California 17 days later, having to support myself for a year on a minimum wage job or a couple of minimum wage jobs, If I really knew what that looked like, if I was aware of what that was going to look like and be like, I never would have gone. So just the fact that I was blind to what I was doing about the potential consequences of what I was doing made me do it. And then I just stuck in there. And again, I almost went back home too. I almost moved back to Illinois, but it didn't happen. And a friend of mine convinced me to stay, and that was important. And my uncle helped me out one more time and kind of got my feet under me. And from there it was more or less up, but boy, I hit the bottom at one point about 9 months out of high school. It was not pretty.
Nice. Tell us, what's one thing right now you would like to improve about yourself?
One thing I'd like to improve about myself. I'd like that my temper is not as quick as it used to be, but I sure would like it to be a little bit longer, a little bit less. I'd like to not get quite so aggravated with stuff so quickly, mostly with my kids, who sometimes get the ass end of things when they shouldn't.
And last one in this little section, but name one resource you use to improve yourself as a person.
Yeah, I don't know. One resource. You got to use the people. Mm-hmm. You got to use people around you that'll tell you the truth. Yeah. And don't be afraid of it. And don't be afraid of somebody that's critical with you. But if it's a critical analysis, not just them being critical of you. And as an analyst and as a talk show person inside of a small sport nowadays, I sometimes get myself into hot water because it gets characterized as I hate a certain person or I hate a certain event or I hate a certain entity. And it's not. I'm just realistically looking at what I see and the facts before me and what I expect. And I've gotten in trouble with some players because I want more out of them than they are able to give when it comes to the national team. And I take the national team very personally. Being an alumni, I'm not an impartial judge of the national team and its talent, whether it be at the coaching staff level or at a player level. My expectations are high as an alumni of that program and as a fan of that program and then as a volleyball person besides. My expectations are high, and I am critical of people that I don't think meet my expectations for what they are capable of, and sometimes that gets me into trouble. If I see people not learning and not progressing, I've said before about a couple of players, I would absolutely give up on them. I would cut them. I would have cut them already. And these are players who are still on teams. And I know that's not easy to hear, but I have high expectations for that. And so dealing with that is pretty tough sometimes interpersonally and in a small sport. And I've said some stuff that maybe, well, in one case wasn't entirely accurate, and I kind of owned up to that. And other stuff that's my opinion that I've heard from a couple of sources, and it's hurt some feelings, and that's just kind of part of the business. But it's not fun. I don't deliberately try and go out and hurt people, but it's just part of what happens if you're in the position I'm in. I'm supposed to analyze what's in front of me.
Yeah. So, I mean, for people listening, this last part about brutal honesty, honestly, is, I think it's so needed, and you need to be held accountable and know that great people or great athletes, for instance, and great people are going to hold you accountable if they see something in you. And if you have a choice to either move forward and accept that or give up. And so that's what I think changes people from good to great. One of the keys. So listen, let's move forward. We're going to cut out a couple things because you already answered them via email, and I'm going to post them in the show notes. But before we tell listeners how to connect with you personally and follow you on your journey, there's just two last things. So I'm going to give you a do-over for your athletic career and learning.
I know, a mulligan.
Yeah, you get a mulligan. Because learning how to get started or to pivot or change direction like we talked about is so important in sport but also in life. I mean, you'll still struggle at times because, of course, you'll be much more informed to make better decisions, right? More often, improve faster, all that kind of good stuff. But I want to take the guessing out of this for a lot of athletes on some things because we still need to fail. So you'll know everything that you know now. You have the same resources that you have when you started, but you'll also have this podcast with people like you and people in other worlds of sports and fitness, nutrition, business, you know, all kinds of things to improve as a person. And you'll have that in your pocket. Would you tie this podcast as a resource into your daily life, and what else would you do differently to set yourself up for success?
Well, I think it's always good to have resources to listen to, but you're not necessarily ready to hear some of the stuff. So I don't know how you speed up that timeline. You have to be ready to hear something. And famous motocross racer, very successful. A good quote from him that I always hear on one of the shows I listen to is, didn't anybody ever sit you down and talk to you during your career? He says, of course they did. But if you're not ready to listen, it doesn't matter how many times people say something.
Yeah.
And I think that's true, no matter where you're at. I mean, people may be right. I look back and think about some of the things Doug Beal told me that I absolutely disagreed with. Doug, you're wrong. You're totally wrong. And I look back now at 40, and I go, ah, crap. Doug was right. Not everything, but there's some of that stuff in there that just people were right. And you got to try and be open to learning. And one of the best things I think you can do, and I never did this. I don't know that it was available because I joined a national team that was in pretty much disarray following the 96 games. But I watched Clay Stanley come in and really follow Tom Hoff and a lot of the things that Tom did to be successful on the team. And I think Clay, I don't know if he did it deliberately or just by happenstance, but I think that was a good thing to do. And I think to follow somebody that you respect, that you think is doing it right, that you view as successful in any career, to try and forge a relationship with them, just to pick their brain, not for opportunity, but just to learn, I think is a good thing to do. And now saying it myself, I've thought about doing it with several broadcasters, and I do it with a couple that I know, and I should move up the chain even further and do it with a couple more, and just to learn, to understand, to figure out not what you need to do, but to have an idea, to have a framework, because no two stories look exactly the same, but there are always applicable pieces to successful people in careers. And if you can talk to enough of those people and glean out the common themes, I think it's something that you can apply to yourself.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that, Kev, because this is all about bringing mentors to people, giving them a ton of different people, because you're not going to resonate with everybody. So I love that advice. And I got to say, there's another stat that 1 out of 5 children from 7 to 13, so kids like yours, for instance, they're going to nominate other than their parents an athlete as their role model. And if that's so, sure. If that's so, we need to be more. And so what I want to do is I want to throw a challenge out there and to listeners to tweet, Instagram, Facebook, hashtag Beyond Athletic with a picture of yourself and maybe with your team. And then tag it with hashtag be more challenge and challenge your friends to be more than just athletic, to find mentors to learn from, to mimic, as you were saying, or copy in certain ways, not to be exactly like, but just to amplify who you really are and help yourself. So, Kevin, I want to ask you the last question that I ask everybody. And that question is, what is your definition of an athlete?
It's awfully esoteric. Definition of an athlete: someone who does not play golf or bowling or a shooting sport. That would be or and many baseball players. I say that in jest. Those are skilled activities. Take nothing away from how hard they are to do. That gets into the what is a sport argument, which is always a fun argument. What is an athlete? Hell, I don't know what an athlete is. An athlete's just another person. It's like famous people. The more you meet famous people, you realize they're just people too. And when it comes to the role model aspect of things, you got to pick the right role model, not just the one who is the glossiest. And athletes are pretty glossy because of the marketing campaigns, their visibility, and so on. But they're maybe not the best choice. And I don't know that a local teacher is the best choice either. Who knows? You got to figure that out for yourself. I don't know what an athlete is. Am I supposed to get profound?
No.
With the answer of what an athlete is?
Not at all. You know, I like what you said, and I mean, I like what everybody says, because for everybody it's different, but that's what is so beautiful about it, is I think the reason why I ask is because you come out of athletics and many people go, well, what am I? Like you were saying, what do I have to offer? I could just spike a ball, you know? And some people could get into that train of thought where this is all I am, like very one-dimensional. And so I love what you said. You're just a person, you know? It's just one part of who you are.
And Ryan, some people are.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, some people are put in this world to be an accountant. Some people were put in this world to be a nurse. Some people put in this world to be a doctor. They have the innate skills to be those things. Some people were put in this world to be a power forward. Some people were put in this world to be an offensive lineman. Some people were to be an outside hitter or maybe an opposite if they can pass on that day. You know, it just depends. And so that's just the plain fact of it. And just because you never find something else you're quite as passionate about or is not the same is not to devalue your person. I mean, that's okay. Some people are meant to be certain things. You got to keep driving to be something else and find fulfillment in life. And if that's the biggest achievement you ever had and you did it at 28 or whatever, you made the Olympics, that's a tough equation, but maybe that's just the way it goes. I don't have all the answers, you know, and I think people insisting that athletes be something else and achieve at something else to the same level that they did before, I don't know if that's realistic.
Well, that's ludicrous. It's
always possible. Yeah, so you got to be comfortable with yourself, and that's what you find with age, I think. You just got to be comfortable with yourself and know that you've done right by yourself, not to the detriment of others, but that if you want something, be willing to put out the effort for it. If you really don't want it, then don't put out the effort for it. But don't say you want it and not be willing to put out the effort to get the thing, and then be disappointed when you didn't get it.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't do the five things you had to get the item. So what are you bummed out about? You should be bummed out you didn't do step number four. That's what you should be bummed out about. Not that you don't have the end prize.
Mm. Accountability. Yeah.
It's another one of my favorite quotes. It comes from that Wear Sunscreen song, which has been attributed to a variety of places, but I think it's a writer from the Chicago Tribune back in the late 80s or something, in a speech she gave for graduation. There's a whole bunch of stuff, and it was a song that was popular around 1991 or two or something, or what else, but it was just a Kurt Vonnegut reading of this or something. And one of the quotes inside of it was, "The race is long, and in the end, it's only with yourself." And I like that. And you got to remember that. Along the same lines, Mike Lambert from the national team, who I rubbed the wrong way for years. And he and I are just different souls. He's very laid back and feel good. And I'm very intense and kind of will step on your face, you know, especially at the time. And he said to me at one point, he said, "Hey, Barney, we're all on our own path." And I remember that. I remember that at times, you know, you got to take the jealousy out of stuff. You got to take the disappointment out of things. You're on your own path, and be happy with your path. If you're not happy with your path, then change it. Honestly, one of the other proudest times I've ever had was watching the team in 2008 get their gold medals. I felt like the 2004 team kind of laid the seeds of 2008. And that's not to say I have any ownership of 08 as a player. I was an announcer. I've been off the team for 3 years, and I was so proud of those guys to have gone on the journey of the 2000 games, the disappointment there, the 2004, all the progress we made there, and then to watch them over subsequent seasons, to get to broadcast them, to get to be a part of that on the broadcast side of things and watch what they achieved was incredible. I was incredibly proud of those men and what they accomplished in 2008 and how they did it and who they were. And I thought, I still have a vision of it, standing off to the side. Our broadcast was over. The medal ceremony was going on. I'd gone down to floor level and I was over in the corner watching them. And it was awesome to be there and to watch them accept those medals and to have watched their entire journey from many of them as my teammates from 1997 all the way to 2008 when they eventually got that gold medal. It was just, it was very powerful and really enjoyable for me just to watch those guys and the success that they had.
Yeah. Wow, man. I don't even know what to say because I was just in that moment because like you, I was watching from home though. And I too, being on the team for 2 years of that quad and not being, you know, a starter, not making any tournaments, but just really feeling, oh my God, so amazing because the team had achieved it. I mean, I really felt like you mentioned, you know, so I can totally understand that. So listen, I just want to acknowledge you for being really a great example of what a man should be to me, because honestly, more than you know, I watched you on and off the court and training in Colorado Springs. And I thank you for that because I needed role models in my life at that point, and you were one. You and Reed and Tom, actually, who one day wanted to kick me out of the gym. which was a great aha moment for me. But, you know, and just for all that you've done and coming on here and giving your time, and I really appreciate that. So I want to take this time to turn it over to you, just share how people can connect with you and follow you, and then we can say goodbye.
Well, thanks, Ryan. Thanks for the kind words. And sorry I yelled at you in practice, because I'm sure it happened several times. I'm sure I was a little rough on the younger guys being in that gym. Yeah, people can follow me at KevBarn14 on Twitter. It's probably the easiest way to do it in social media. I'm somewhat active on that when it comes to the different broadcasts that I'm doing, basketball, volleyball, motorcycles, whatever I'm into, or whatever happens to tick me off on any potential day. If they want to listen to my show, it's The Net Live. It's available on iTunes. It is free, so it's the right price for anyone. It's thenetlive@gmail.com is our email address. You can also go thenetlive at Twitter or thenetlive on Facebook, and you can check out any of those. We try and make it a show that's not just about volleyball. So even if you're a non-volleyball person, we try and relate a lot of stuff to volleyball, but we try and do a regular just talk show for about an hour, and it's a lot of fun. And then the second hour is usually pretty volleyball heavy with interviews and people and regular segments and things. So if folks want to check that out, we always appreciate listens and interactions with folks in the wider sports world, not just volleyball itself. It's fun to get to know athletes, because we're all very similar in the approach to life. That's what you come to find out. And you know this from traveling and living all across the world. There's a lot more similarities than there are differences when it comes to people. For sure. We're all basically just the same folks and trying to do the same things and wanting the same things for us or for our kids or whatever. It's nice to know that. It's very comforting to know that in an environment which tries to point out the differences and the problems between people more often than the similarities.
Yeah, I do agree with that, man. And thank you so much for sharing all that, Kev. And I just want to say for everybody listening out there, if you are listening right now, make sure you tweet at KevBarn14. And just say what you thought about the show, and make sure you go over and hear at least one episode on the Net Live, because it is a fun show to listen to. You guys get into a lot of stuff. It's definitely a variety of stuff, not just volleyball, like you mentioned in the first part. But my goal, Kevin, is to help beyond a million current and future athletes use sport as a vehicle and discover more about life, success, leaving legacies, because, you know, it's about living a great life and using the tools along the way, the lessons you learn. And speaking of help, I mean, we could use a lot of help. We, as in myself and my puppy, because that's all right now is doing things with this show. So if anybody's interested, go to beyondathletic.com/help. We could use people in any area. But thanks again, Kevin. And remember to always be more.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate the offer and appreciate the time.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
So everybody, that was a great episode with Kevin Barnett of Team USA, former two-time Olympian. Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic lessons in there. Very insightful. If you did like this, make sure you share it with one friend. I mean, if you heard some things in here where it resonated with you, or you feel like it would resonate with one of your friends, make sure you tweet them the link to this show. And make sure that you push that someone listens to this so that it can enhance their life in some way. And as always, if you did enjoy this show yourself, or you have any recommendations in terms of how I can make it better, make sure you stop on over by iTunes and just leave a rating and review and comments about how I can improve it. And as John Lee Dumas of Entrepreneur on Fire podcast that I love so much always says, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And today you've been hanging out with Kevin Barnett and myself, RJO. So until next time, be more.
So now I'm up in the courts, pleading my case from the witness box. Telling the judge and the jury the same thing that I said to the cops. On the day that I got arrested, I'm innocent, I protested. She just feels rejected. Had a heart broken by someone she's obsessed with. Cause she likes the sound of my music. She makes her a fan of my music. So I love goes down into music.
What we doing live? Echoes in eternity.
I'm gonna show you how great I am.
And this concludes our Chicago show. Please stay tuned.